We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, introducing Rock Art Podcast. What we're going to talk about today is a series of cultural tours out to some of the most magnificent rock art sites in all the world. Ryan Gerster, one of the board members who heads up the cultural tours, will be taking us on a little trip. We are blessed and honored to have Ryan Gerster with us this evening. He is a board member for the California Rock Art Foundation, and he heads up the division of our nonprofit scientific and educational corporation, helping us to facilitate cultural tours. He's a professional archaeologist getting an advanced degree from USC, the University of Southern California. His specialties are in rock art, but also in some of the field work involved. And I'm sure we'll get in touching on some of that. Ryan, can you hear me okay?
I can. Alan, thank you. Thank you for having me. Well, it's great to be here.
Yeah. I think you wanted to kick this off more in the realm of talking about your special relationship with the California Rock Art Foundation. And you really head up the division involved with what we're calling cultural tours. And what are cultural tours?
I think, you know, cultural tours can be differentiated from our other rock art tours in that, you know, these are the tours we do in Baja, Mexico, to visit the Great Murals rock art sites. We have trips, mostly day trips around California to individual rock art sites, but these tours differ in that it's a really immersive experience.
It's a grand adventure, isn't it?
Remote areas. certainly, yeah.
How long is an average cultural tour to the Great Mural rock art in Baja California?
Sure. So these are 8-day trips.
Ah.
Let's see, with our partners at Saddling South, which is a ecotourism company, a pack saddling company located out of Laredo. We partner with them and lead these 8-day trips into the Sierra of San Francisco. This is a remote mountain range, really in the center of the Baja Peninsula.
So when you say remote mountain range, I always describe it as sort of the Grand Canyon of Mexico. Now, these people that are involved on this tour, are they going into an area they can drive?
Not entirely. We run several trips, really to 3 canyon systems, Santa Teresa, San Gregorio, and the Santa Marta area into Parral Canyon. This year, we're running 4 trips, tentatively 4. We are for sure running 3, 2 of which are full. These are going to alternate between San Gregorio Canyon and Santa Teresa Canyon. And the jumping off points for all of these trips, both of these canyon systems, is a pueblo called Sierra San Francisco.
Ah.
And from here, we load donkeys and ride mules for several days to visit these extraordinary sites. stopping through small ranchos along the way.
So for those people who have little to no background on what this country's like, where are you and what does it look like, and kind of what's the environment that they're going to be in, and how the heck do they get in there, and what goes on?
Sure. So it's really rugged terrain. These are really towering mesas that we ride old trails along, descend into these beautiful canyons. It's a really amazing cactus forest with tall cardones and choya, really amazing flora. And we ascend these cactus forests into lush oases studded with palm trees and other plants, actually, that were left by missionaries and the Jesuits, including date palms and other fruiting plants.
One thing I saw when I went down there, I've been on a few trips down there, and I was honored and blessed to be part and parcel of some of these epic adventures. When you think of a desert, you don't usually think of something that is literally choked with vegetation and completely covered with quite a repertoire of beauty, do we?
No, and I think that's what makes this area unique, is that this volcanic landscape, springs emerge, and you know, these springs really support these dense groves of palm trees, and are really the locations of the ranchos today. These are really small villages where local vaqueros, the Serrano people, are tending to goats and making cheese and trading that cheese amongst the other villages and eventually to the pueblos and the other towns in Baja.
So we're talking about an area that is very, very thinly populated.
Yeah, certainly. It could be a 1 to 2 day ride between these small ranchos. These small ranchos are composed of just several families in a lot of instances, and might just be a couple dozen people that live in these places year round.
And so they make their living by, is it goat herding, you said?
That's certainly probably the primary economy there is goats and making cheese. They're also tending to cattle and selling the meat and also making leather. Lots of fine leather workers in the canyons.
So how does one get around in this country where there's no roads for automotive vehicles? I presume there's trails of sorts, isn't there?
Yeah, so there's trails. Everything is brought in on donkeys, and the vaqueros are riding mules. They're extremely sure-footed.
What about horses? No horses?
So horses aren't really adapted to this terrain, and so mules are much more sure-footed, not easily spooked, and can navigate really the steep and the rocky terrain that is Baja. And then, you know, horses are bred with mules to produce donkeys, and donkeys are the pack animals that bring all the gear into these places.
Yeah, the burros. So what we're doing is, I guess, we go on these excursions. We jump on a mule. We've got burros behind us. We're on these little trails descending these immense canyons. Why would someone do this? What's the intrigue here, Doctor?
So it's really what these tours are focused on is visiting incredible archaeological sites. And let me just backtrack. I misspoke a moment ago. So mules are male donkey and a female horse bred.
Yes.
The offspring is a mule. And so these animals are really what's needed to navigate this terrain. I would say it's safer to ride a mule than to go on foot in this terrain, just because of the loose talus slope and how the danger of the cliffside when hiking in. So mules are certainly the animal of choice.
Yeah, they're sure footed, and they can get you. They know the trails and they can get you there, right?
Precisely.
Okay.
Really, the draw to this area is the incredible archaeology, the painted rock shelters, which is, you know, what we're talking about and what we're bringing people to see. One of the most amazing things is that you know, you have this painted rock art expression, some of the most incredible rock art in the world in this remote area that's protected by these local people who are equally as incredible in their own cultural ways. And it's so different from our own that, you know, while I think a lot of people come to see the rock art, their biggest takeaway is this amazing culture that protects it and brings us to see it.
So in other words, there's two layers.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Two layers to this. You know, you have the archaeology and then you have the local culture there that protects the rock art.
Yeah.
And if I can just, I know you've had some discussions of the Great Mules rock art on previous podcasts, but just for some context for our listeners,
please
just discuss a little bit more about this rock art tradition when it was discovered, when it was made really more well known in the mid 20th century. And then we can discuss, you know, who painted them, how old they are. A lot of, you know, questions people ask on these trips are, what do they mean?
Sure.
And I know you've gotten that into a little bit in previous podcasts, but I think it would help give our listeners context just to go over
absolutely
these talking points.
And then possibly, you know, some sort of word picture of what they're looking at, because it is so overwhelming and spectacular in terms of their visage, the images as well. So take it away, Ryan. Give us sort of the busman's holiday of Great Mural rock art.
Sure. Yeah. I'll just give a little background. So the Great Murals really, you know, gained the attention of archaeologists and the academic community after the Gardner expedition. This took place between March and April of 1962, led by Earl Stanley Gardner, who's a mystery writer, a fiction writer. This expedition was accompanied by archaeologist Clem Meehan, a well-known California archaeologist. And this reconnaissance in 1962 was accomplished on foot, but also with helicopters. The canyons are so overgrown that many of the sites weren't accessible and really still aren't to this day. So 1962 and the Gardner expedition was really when the Great Murals came on the map as far as archaeologists' attention and rock art researchers' attention. Of course, they were well known by the missionaries dating back hundreds of years, but this is where it really all started. In the 1970s, the paintings were surveyed by Harry Crosby, a photographer. This expedition was on mule. This is where the iconic photograph of Crosby and his informant Tacho Arce was taken in front of Cueva Pintada. I'm sure you're familiar with that photograph.
Certainly. Maybe tell our listeners how big the rock shelter / cave is and how big these paintings are.
Sure. So we like to say these are cave paintings, but really they occur in rock shelters, large overhangs, volcanic overhangs in these canyons. And that's how these paintings still exist, is that they're protected from the weather to some extent. The size of the paintings themselves, and we'll get into the character of what the Great Murals are, but the shelters themselves are massive. Cueva Pintada, for example, I believe runs 200 to 300 meters in length, with almost a continuous rock art panel below it. This site occurs in Santa Teresa Canyon and is one of the destinations of our Santa Teresa trip. It's arguably the hallmark Great Mural site, with one of the largest murals at the south end of the cave, the rock shelter. And it's really extraordinary. There's a boardwalk that's been built below it, so visitors have a sort of a safe platform to view the paintings from, because it really occurs along a cliffside, a couple hundred feet drop to the bottom of the canyon, just below the paintings. When we bring people on these trips, everyone really wants to know a few things, like who painted them, how old are they, and what do they mean?
Hold that thought, Ryan.
Sure.
We're up against a break. I want to move into the subject matter and the characterization of these murals so they can get a word picture of what we're looking at. So I'll see you, gang, on the flip-flop. Thanks.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high-quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high-quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months or go to zencastr.com and use the code ROCKART. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
So, Ryan, what do the archaeologists have to say about the age of the rock art?
Sure. So, really, the oldest dates, and these are AMS radiocarbon dates on the pigment, on organics in the pigment of the rock art of the Great Murals. And some of the oldest dates are right around 7,500 years before present. The dates stack, though, right around 2,500 years before present. So really what we're looking at is 5,500 BC to right around 500 BC 81 for the Great Murals rock art tradition, although we do know that the style persisted until contact. We have at Cueva Pintada crosses painted over top of some of the Great Murals paintings. And so we do know this style persisted along with the Kochimi until contact. And so I think, and now let's briefly talk about the artisans, the Kochimi.
Yeah, certainly.
Who are the creators of of this rock art. Yeah. Sure, so the Kochimi, they're hunter-gatherer, fishers, foragers. These are people of the Baja Peninsula, the central Baja Peninsula. Linguistic group is human. So these are human-speaking people.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, there were no survivors of the contact period. You know, as we know, they were missionized by the Jesuits, I believe first contacted by the Franciscans, but ultimately missionized by the Jesuits, which, you know, was their downfall due to disease. Smallpox was what really wiped them out. The range of the Kochimi was far beyond the Sierra de San Francisco, this mountain range we've been discussing right in the center of the peninsula, but this is really where the Great Murals are centered on. They're really isolated to this range. They do occur in adjacent areas, such as the paintings of San Borjita, which is, you know, outside of the range, south near Mulegé. But this Great Murals painted style is relatively isolated to this area.
And it is rather impressive because it continues in very similar, not homogenous, but certainly the characteristics are there. These monos, these individuals with their hands astride up in the air, and the principal animals, of course, are deer, and then also bighorn sheep. And those are the major players in this wonderful canopy of movement and visual delights. They have other liminal animals, animals that live in, you know, a couple of different worlds, as it were. You know, there's fish and there's diving ducks and there's other things along those lines. Now, I guess these are all paintings. Is there any other kinds of rock art in this same area?
Sure. There is a small overlap of petroglyphs. I'm thinking, you know, most notably in Santa Teresa Canyon, you have Piedra de Chuy. It's sort of a classic petroglyph boulder covered in abstract imagery. And then you have a very interesting petroglyph field near Mulegé that I believe you've been to, Piedras Pintas.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be called Great Murals rock art. It doesn't have, you know, the hallmark representational monos or really deer or pronghorn. What it is it's aquatic life swimming vertically. You have schools of fish and sea mammals all in an upright position, almost as if they're swimming up towards the sky. This is an incredible sight that we visit. I believe on the San Gregorio trip, this will be a site that we stop at on the way back to Loreto.
So how many times have you been out to Baja now, Ryan?
Sure. So it all started for us in 2018, where, as you know, along with the Bradshaw Foundation, we did a small trip to Santa Teresa Canyon with a small group. And that's what really started these California Rock Art Foundation-based cultural tours with our partners at Saddling South. So I've been to Santa Teresa Canyon twice now. I've been to San Gregorio Canyon once. And then a couple years ago, I went to Parral Canyon, which is certainly the most remote of the three canyon systems. And I'll briefly discuss, you know, what these tours are like. So we have a very small group. There's only room for six participants on each tour. Like we said, they're 8 days long. Most folks fly into Loreto, which is a small coastal town in the Sea of Cortez. From Loreto, we travel 2 hours north to a small town of San Ignacio, and this is the jumping off point for these trips. Immediately north of San Ignacio is the Sierra San Francisco mountain range. We travel to a small pueblo, Sierra de San Francisco, called San Francisco. From here, we meet the vaqueros, and that's Spanish for cowboy, and they're our guides. They show up from various ranchos. It's actually a lottery system for who gets to lead each trip. It's a way to make it fair for all these locals that are really spread out across the mountain in their own ranchos. So they come from various places with their own mules and donkeys. And this is the jumping off point. This is where we load the donkeys with our gear, saddle the mules, and start these trips into this remote mountain wilderness, descending into the canyons.
So, Ryan, who are these vaqueros? I mean, what's their background, and how do they possibly know about all of this to help in these tours?
Sure. So these are really amazing people. They're ranchers and herders, and they basically run these remote ranchos, which I described in the first segment of this podcast. And really, they're descendants of the Jesuit missionaries. You'll hear a lot of repeating last names, Arce Ojeda. And I mentioned the first segment, Harry Crosby's informant, Tacho Arce. He's a relative of, you know, many of our guides that we are fortunate to use today. And so it's really amazing the connection that these people have with the land and the animals and their knowledge of the local flora and fauna. Their relationship with the paintings is that they are the protectors of the paintings. They work in some regard with the Mexican government, with INAH, to make sure that there's no impact left by visitation to the sites. And sort of because of this relationship between the vaqueros and the government, these sites are untouched. You won't see graffiti. You know, there's no, or a very minimal sign of visitation to many of these sites, which adds to their significance as really incredible cultural resources. And because of that, the Sierra San Francisco is listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Which is absolutely amazing, of course, because these are world-class rock art sites. And the people that help on these tours are just intimately acquainted with the land. And they see it as really not a challenge because they grew up there and they know the trails, they know the landscape, they know their animals, and they have tremendous expertise in giving tours or providing the complements of what is necessary to spend time camping and enjoying a wondrous experience.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them are really great musicians too. Hopefully on, you know, each of these trips, there's at least one guitar in the group, and they play really beautiful music and songs around the campfire, and it certainly adds to the experience. Let's see. I think we should talk next about the dates of these trips and the remaining space for any listeners that might want to attend. Just a little bit more info about the trips we have planned for this spring.
Go right ahead.
Great. So, so really March and April is the time to be in the canyon. It's the most temperate time of year before everything gets really, really hot during the summer. So come May, June, it's not a pleasant place to be. We're running a trip to San Gregorio Canyon, March 4th through the 11th. This trip is full. Our second trip is into Santa Teresa, the 12th through the 19th. This is also full, but we have one space remaining on the San Gregorio Canyon trip, March 18th through the 25th. And then we've recently opened up a trip back into Santa Teresa Canyon. That's March 26th through April 2nd. So anyone listening to podcasts that's interested in attending should actually email our partner at Saddling South, Trudy Angel. Her email address is tourloretto, T-O-U-R-L-O-R-E-T-O, at AOL.com. And again, this is Trudy Angel. She's our partner and owner of Saddling South. Really amazing woman who's been running pack trips into the canyon for a couple decades now and has a really amazing relationship with the locals. And we're really lucky to be partnering with her. These trips support the local economy in a huge way. There's a lottery system because of how, for the vaqueros leading these trips, because of how lucrative these can be for the communities. And, you know, visiting these places, there's often textiles and leather goods to buy, also cheese. You know, small portion of the fees go to camping in or near the ranchos. And so it really does benefit the locals in a huge way. And you really see that when you're there, how excited they are for us to ride into these little villages and how open they are to sharing their culture with outsiders.
So these trips, you go there and it's kind of the full meal deal, kind of you're taken care of, aren't you?
Yeah. So the trips basically include, you know, from once you fly into Loretto, everything's taken care of, transportation, sort of hotels, the few hotel stays that we do have as we work our way to the canyon. And then from there, we pack full kitchen onto the donkeys and have a cook, and all meals are taken care of. Gear is provided. You know, we're camping in remote areas, so everyone will pitch a tent, sleeping pad, sleeping bag, you know, full camping gear is required and provided. And so, you know, as far as a pack trip goes, yeah, this is the all-inclusive version. So it's quite the adventure.
And so the vaqueros help in terms of packing the stuff up on top of the burros, and then they get the mulas, and we follow them on a trail and go to the next place, don't we?
Yeah. And, you know, some of the longer riding days, I would say, are 6 hours of riding, plenty of breaks. And then we'll usually ride into the canyon and set up a base camp.
Uh-huh.
In the case of Santa Teresa, it's a really remote base camp where two canyons meet, Soledad and Santa Teresa. In this Palm Oasis, we'll set up camp and then do day trips from there for several days.
Wow.
In the case of San Gregorio, we actually set up camp at a small village, Rancho, San Gregorio Rancho, which is an equally amazing experience.
So when we go there, we also get to visit the ranchos, the little pueblitos?
Yeah. And so this is a really amazing, you know, part of the trip is interacting with the locals and seeing the cheese making process is incredible. And trying the cheese, and there's typically tortillas can be bought in some of the ranchos, and it's really incredible. On the Santa Teresa trip, there's several rock art sites we're going to visit.
Hold that thought for a moment. We're up against a hard break. See you on the flip-flop, gang, for the final segment.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
Welcome back, gang. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel with your Rock Art podcast. And this is the third segment. We're going to jump right back in with Ryan and continue sort of our discussion about the great mural Rock Art. Ryan's the head of the cultural tour division for the California Rock Art Foundation. And today we're talking about the great mural Rock Art in the Sierra de San Francisco in what has been called the Grand Canyon of Mexico. Hey, Ryan, it's all yours. Give us a little bit of a soundbite about what we can expect.
Sure. So in the previous segments, we talked about the characteristics of the style. I believe we talked about, you know, the Cochimi, the artisans, the Native American group who left these murals. We briefly talked about the age. I think we should sort of get into, yeah, some of the trip logistics.
Yeah. And I think you had mentioned that there's at least three trips and some limited opportunities for people to jump on, correct?
Sure. So we still have some limited spaces on the trip to San Gregorio Canyon. And now we've opened a new trip into Santa Teresa Canyon. I believe there's one space left in San Gregorio, and there are five spaces left on Santa Teresa. The Santa Teresa trip is March 26th through April 2nd. The San Gregorio trip is March 18th through March 25th. So end of March, early April, this spring, for any listeners that are interested. Each of these trips is going to visit several sites. I would say at least six major rock art sites. The San Gregorio trip, for example, descends into San Gregorio Canyon. And right from where we're camped, it's just a few minute hike to San Gregorio 1 and 2. And these are absolutely amazing hallmark great mural sites. Days 2 and 3 in San Gregorio, we venture further into the canyon on mule, combination of riding and hiking. Brings us to sites including La Palma, El Borrego, Tortuga, among others. So there's several sites on the San Gregorio trip that we'll visit. As far as Santa Teresa goes, same thing. You know, we drop into the canyon and almost visible from where we're camped is Las Flechas, which is a small but well-known and really unique rock shelter. That's on the opposite of the canyon from Cueva Pintada, which we've discussed. This is the hallmark great mural site. An hour hike up Soledad Canyon takes us to Cueva Soledad, which is an amazing site as well. And then from here, we have day trips further up the canyon to sites including Musicos, Boca de San Julio, Piedra de Chuy, and then Santa Teresa 1 and 2. And so, you know, folks coming on these trips are going to see a lot of rock art, probably to the point where they're sick of rock art towards the end.
I don't think you can get sick of seeing this rock art. This is some of the most incredible stuff you're ever going to see. I remember when I first went into these rock shelters, I didn't know what to look at. Either do I look at the rock shelter or do I look at the vista? Because the vistas, the incredible canopy and the beauty of where I am and what I can see just out the door of the rock shelter was just jaw-dropping. And so you have to wonder about just the beauty, the awe, the mystery, and all of that. And then, of course, you have the overlay of the people, the culture, the Baja culture of the Californios, the Vaqueros. I guess that's part of the trip as well, isn't it?
Yeah, probably that's probably the biggest takeaway from the trip is this culture of Serranos that inhabit the canyons. You know, you mentioned the rock art and the vistas and the vaqueros, but there also is a dense expression of archaeology on the floor of the shelter. It's blanketed in artifacts, obsidian flakes from stone tool production, habitation debris, charcoal, shells, lots of groundstone artifacts, monos, metates can be found almost anywhere in the canyon. So it's really, really rich in archaeology.
So in other words, it's what you're looking at is relatively pristine and very rich archaeological sites from their own standpoint. And then besides the archaeology, you have the spectacular rock art. And as a further bonus, you have the amazing vaquero culture of these pueblitos and a chance to meet with the people and visit with them and learn more about how they come to be in this remarkable area. living in a way that is quite unique, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I asked you on the one before, what is it that makes you keep coming back, keep leading tours, and what is it that you find so endearing about this place called the Peninsula of Baja and the Sierra de San Francisco?
Sure. So, you know, as an archaeologist, I'm obviously really interested in, you know, both the rock art, but also this, you know, dense expression of archaeology that accompanies it. And then, you know, as an anthropologist, obviously very interested in the culture down there, this village setting and these people living in very simple ways, you know, without electricity or running water. Or, you know, a lot of things we take for granted. And so, you know, as a, you know, rock art researcher as well, you know, rock art captivates, I would say, you know, a certain type of person. And people that come on these trips come from a diverse background. Some are archaeologists, some are rock art explorers, some are just, you know, folks interested in history or folks interested in, the, you know, the rugged landscape and the adventure.
Absolutely. So you have adventure, you have archaeology, you got science, you got beauty and aesthetics, you have anthropological cultures. You can't ask for much more, can you? And you have an epic adventure. It's got the whole package.
It's the whole package.
All in one. So I think that's about it. I think we should put a bow on it. What do you want to tell anybody who has an interest, who might want to explore an opportunity to participate? How do they get a hold of us and, you know, connect?
Sure. Well, so the best place to get more information is from our website, carockart.org/cultural-adventures. This will take them to the site with all the trip dates and also links to itineraries and gear lists, pricing, stuff like that. And then from there, the person to contact is Trudy Angel, who's the owner of Saddling South, our partner in Mexico. You can get a hold of her on her email. Trudy's email is tourloreto@aol.com, TOURLOREETO, tourloreto@aol.com. And from there, you'll get even more information and can book one of these trips.
Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you've got a lot on your platter, but I think for those that have an interest, they're really going to get a kick out of listening to you because you have so much background and so much expertise and so much passion for this remarkable excursions that we put on for those interested in helping to protect, preserve, conserve, and learn more about the fabulous rock art of Baja California, the great murals. Well, see you next week, gang. See you in the flip-flop.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Culturo Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.